Memorial Day night. Does that sound funny? Memorial Day night. I just feel like it's a Monday night. Since we're still in our regular routine and it's a busy week. So we've got a lot to do, but for those of you for whom we need to ease into it, for those of you who are feeling like it's not a long enough holiday weekend, you need more time. Well, I certainly understand, but that's what we're here for, ushering in the start of your work week. I know that the roads were blissfully quiet driving into the studio. Oh, so nice. It makes up for the total insanity on Sunday night coming into work with people primarily having the Monday off and so taking to the streets to celebrate or just enjoy not having to work the next day. And so going back home on Monday morning, one of the quickest commutes that I will have all year, and then coming into work, that might be it. That may be my quota for 2024. Two quiet drives in and out of work. So I'm okay with working the holiday if I can trade a typical commute in and out with one that was quiet. But mostly, and I say all that, yes, I am telling the truth, but mostly though, I enjoy working holidays to connect with different people that don't hear our show as often or have never heard our show before until now. If that's you, of course, we'd love to hear from you on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence, the Infinity Sports Network. If you are on either one of our social media sites, or you have the chance to check out our social media, please do. I shared a video that I personally took when I was at Pearl Harbor. This is a simple video that I had to share because it's perfect. Not only was it taken at Pearl Harbor, and the memorial that stands over the top of the USS Arizona, which is a burial site for thousands of people who lost their lives on that fateful day. But also, the way the monument is built, it's open air. And there is a flag that flies over the top of Pearl Harbor. It was a perfect day, gorgeous blue skies, not a cloud that we could see. And because it's quiet on the memorial, the Navy asks that you're respectful, keep your voices down, allow people to pay their respects and to visit what is a somber site. And again, they remind us, a grave site for so many who gave their lives in the line of duty. Because of that, the video has almost no sound except for the wind blowing the flag. It was really powerful for me when I took the video, and I thought it fit today's occasion perfectly. Want to say thank you to those of you who wrote to us and shared names, photos, memories of loved ones, in some cases, parents, grandparents, uncles, friends, who did give their lives in service to our country. And that's what we mark on this Memorial Day. Some of them I would really like to share as we head through this edition of the show. And if you want to join in, that post is still up on either Twitter or Facebook, but also you can just send them to either my Twitter or our show account at Amy After Hours, or find us on Facebook. It's not too late. And some of your stories, your memories, they're poignant, they're powerful, and they're a reminder that even if we don't know each of the men and women who gave their lives as a sacrifice, not just for our country, for their families, but one that extends this tradition of freedom that we have, think it's important to put faces, names to that concept. And to hear from you personally means so much to me. So I hope that you'll check them out on either Twitter or Facebook. A lot of you also weighing in about our conversation regarding mental health, depression, anxiety, families who deal with their loved ones and try to help them the best they can. And yet sometimes it ends in tragedy, that struggle, that battle. Grayson Murray, the golfer, really hitting home with many of you. And a lot of you reached out. Some of you even sharing your own stories, your own battles with mental health. And then I was just reading, I believe it happened over the weekend when I was traveling, or the revelation was made over the weekend, that former NBA head coach and current TV analyst Stan Van Gundy, who had lost his wife going back to August of last year, he finally revealed her cause of death was also suicide, and just said he's so devastated that he can't imagine he'll ever get over it. The conversation will certainly continue. It's important. In fact, it's critical. And I hope that by sharing Grayson's story and talking about what is this tragedy when a human being feels like there's no other way except to end their own lives. By talking about that, I hope other people know they're not alone if they struggle, but also that there is help. There are people who care. And to think about those who are left behind and their agony. So thank you for sharing. Thank you for reaching out. Still many of you reaching out about my mom and the blog post I wrote about her. I'll have to reshare that at some point. But yeah, lots of conversation going on over this holiday weekend. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, and our phone number 855-212-4227. Bill Walton passing away in these last 24 hours. His family making the announcement after a battle with cancer. He was just 71. And you want to talk about a personality, a larger than life figure who has no equal on this planet. Oh my gosh. There is no one like Bill Walton. I had the chance to work with him in passing at my previous network, but there are so many stories about him today, so many people who knew him well, whether through work or personally. He had the uncanny ability to make friends and leave lasting impressions everywhere he went. You couldn't come away from an interaction with Bill Walton and just forget it. That wasn't possible. My friend Steve Futterman is a longtime radio news reporter and correspondent. He's covered almost every event on the world stage for decades and is a huge sports fan. Got to the point in his career with CBS News where he was able to pick and choose what he wanted to cover, and very often would cover some of the biggest events in sports, like championships, like Super Bowls, like Olympics. He reached out to me. We became friends at the Gracie Awards a few years ago. He reached out to me to ask if he could join our show from Los Angeles, which is where he lives, to talk about his friendship with the Hall of Famer Bill Walton. And of course I said yes. He will join us in 10 minutes here on the show. We'll get to some of Bill's quirky, funny, memorable moments on TV, just in his unique way of walking through life. There's nobody who could say it quite like Bill. And then many people who are remembering him today, of course. Want to spend some time talking about him. I know the basketball world is mourning his loss. And he was a former Celtic. And on this day in 2024, as basketball remembered Bill, the Celtics were trying to close out the Indiana Pacers. Wash, rinse, repeat. 3 of the 4 games in the Eastern Conference Finals had a very similar format. The biggest difference between the Pacers and the Celtics, experience, but also the Celtics could close, the Pacers could not. If the Pacers had the ability to close, and certainly Tyrese Halliburton could have helped with that, but injuries are part of the game. Celtics don't have Kristaps Porzingis. But I'm thinking of a moment in the fourth quarter, about 8.5 minutes to go. I remember I checked the TV, and I actually said to my husband, that may be a major turning point in this fourth quarter. It may be a major determinant in whether the Pacers win or lose. With 8.5 minutes to go, TJ McConnell got a rebound. The Pacers busted out on a fast break, trying to get an advantage, being aggressive. We saw that aggressiveness a good portion of this fourth quarter against Boston. McConnell gives up the ball, top of the key. He gets it back. He goes straight to the hoop. He gets it back on a brilliant pass. In the lane, he's wide open, ball in stride. He misses the layup. At that point, it was a 9-point advantage for the Pacers. They could have been up 11, right? They could have had a double-figure lead with about 8 minutes to go. And I'm not saying that that would have won them the game or anything like that, only that it was a major turning point because they never did lead by double figures. Instead, going the other direction, Jaylen Brown hits a 3. And instead of being an 11-point lead, it's down to 7. About 6 minutes to go, the Pacers are up by 8. From that point on, Boston hits big shot after big shot, and the Pacers either get tight or get cold. They turn the ball over, careless with that basketball, and the Celtics outscored them 15-4 to close the game. You know what it reminded me of? The final 2.5 minutes? I know it's a different stage, but I just talked about it with Kyrie Irving. When the Cavaliers won their NBA title against the Golden State Warriors, I think it was 2015, right? Game 7 was on the road in Oakland at the time. And the final 2.5 minutes of Game 7, there was only one bucket. That was it, just one shot made. Well, final 2.5 minutes of this Game 4 at the Fieldhouse, Celtics Pacers. Just one bucket made over the final 2.5 minutes.
Celtics get their turn as we go into minute 48 of Game 4. A chance for the Celtics to win the Eastern Conference Championship on the road as they did 2 years ago. Jaylen stops on a dime, dribbles to the middle of the floor, jump pass out of the corner. Derek White for 3. Got it! Derek White from the right corner has given Boston a 105-102 lead. 41 seconds to go in Game 4. TJ McConnell, handoff Nembhard. Nembhard turns the corner, steps to his right, 3 to tie it. No. Rebound. Jason Tatum pulls it down and gets fouled in the backcourt by Nesmith.
Wow. Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Boston by 3 and the ball. 22 seconds to go in Game 4. Shot clock differential is 5 seconds. Drew Holiday deep on the right side. Horford comes out to set the screen. It's Holiday against Turner. Cross court Tatum. 6 on the shot clock. Tatum against Turner. Tatum pushes off, steps back, three in the air, no good, rebound, Drew Holiday, 4 seconds to go, kick out Jaylen, can they get to him to commit the foul? They cannot, and it's over. It's over. The Boston Celtics swarm the floor. All year they said this team couldn't win in the clutch. They said they couldn't win at home. They said they played with their food. And they said the season was a failure if they didn't reach the finals. They have had a bad year because game one is in Boston on June the 6th.
Sean Grandy, Cedric Maxwell on Celtics Radio. Yes, only one bucket in the final 2.5 minutes. It snapped a 102-102 tie. Derek White on a feed from Jaylen Brown, corner three. And then, again, big play after big play. Jaylen Brown with a block shot at one end. Drew Holiday with an offensive rebound at the other end. And the Celtics do those little things right, even when they weren't scoring, to rally past the Pacers and make this a sweep. Jaylen, the Eastern Conference Finals MVP, named after one Larry Bird. And we'll hear from the Celtics and Pacers locker rooms, as Boston will have from now until next Thursday night before the NBA Finals begin. How do I know it's next Thursday? Because it's my husband's birthday and I've got lots of plans. Surprises. But I'll be here that night. Don't you worry. Sorry, babe. Coming up next, Steve Futterman will join us to talk about his friend Bill Walton, who passed away after a long time battle with cancer and is being remembered so fondly and uniquely by the basketball community. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
I'm a team guy, and I'm really enjoying this year's NBA Finals. I found basketball when I was 8 years old, 3 years after I found my bike. And then, just 1 year later, I found Chick Hearn on the radio, and that changed everything for me. When I was 15, I found the Grateful Dead, Stu Gotts, UCLA, and John Wooden.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The legendary Bill Walton, one of the greatest centers who ever played the game of basketball, but man, a guy who had so many other loves and tastes and great diversity, and really would talk about all of those other things even more than he would talk about basketball. Longtime player, UCLA, the NBA, then on into a broadcasting career that spanned decades. But mostly, if you ever had an interaction with Bill Walton, you would never forget it. That was Bill on the Dan Le Batard show with Stu Gotts recently about why he was the luckiest man in the world, passing away over the weekend at age 71 after a battle with cancer. Steve Futterman is a longtime news correspondent and a friend that I've made over the few years that I've been here at our network, and reached out to me to ask if I'd like to have him as a guest to talk about Bill Walton. And of course I would, since Steve knew him personally. Steve, thank you so much for joining us. I know this is a bittersweet day, and yet you have such fond memories of Bill. How come?
Well, he was just a great guy. You know, you played that little tease cut there where he talked about growing up in San Diego and being able to listen to Chick Hearn, the L.A. Laker announcer, and the broadcast back then were able to get to San Diego. And the L.A. team at that time, at least the Lakers, were beloved in San Diego. And that made me realize that, in truth, although Bill and I never spoke about this, he grew up being a Laker fan, which always made me wonder, how did he feel about giving the Celtics, the much, much hated Celtics, if you're a Laker fan, how did he feel giving the Celtics a championship? But that's another sidelight to the crazy stories about Bill Walton. There were no consistencies sometimes. Consistencies that he spoke what he felt, always told what he felt, was honest, never held back, but there were some things that weren't always consistent with Bill Walton.
How did you get to know him?
I got to know him. Well, first of all, my first connection with Bill was as a fan. I was a kid growing up in L.A. I remember seeing him at UCLA games. In fact, his first Final Four happened to be in Los Angeles. I think this was in 1972. The Final Four was in Los Angeles, and I went to the Sports Arena, an arena that no longer exists, and saw Bill Walton in the Final Four. So I saw him play growing up. Was always a huge UCLA fan. Kareem, I mean, just still am, by the way. Big UCLA fan. So I was just an admirer of his. And, of course, he won. So I've always followed his career. Remember very well the famous second Final Four he was in, which was against Memphis State. 21 out of 22 shots he made, and still, I think, one of the greatest performances in the championship game. And so I've always followed him. But the way I got to know him in this sense was Bill Walton was a news junkie. I became aware that he listened to news, and I'm a newscaster. So he was aware of me, not as much as I was aware of him, but he was aware of me. And we met one time. I'm trying to remember how it first happened, but we did become acquainted. And then every time I would see him, I would say hello. We would talk at times. We would share stories sometimes. And that's really how I got to know Bill Walton.
Steve Futterman is with us now from, are you in L.A.?
Yeah, in L.A.
And he was a longtime correspondent with CBS News, and I was talking about you earlier, Steve, that not only have you covered events on the world stage, serious events, tragedies, both man-made and natural, but also being a big-time sports fan, I just have remembered you for years covering some of the biggest events on that sports stage. So then when it came to Bill Walton, what type of impression did he leave on you after you were able to speak with him personally?
Oh, I mean, this guy is... He's not trying to seduce you. He's not trying to charm you, but he is what he is. The honesty about Bill Walton is what is, I think, so seductive. As a news reporter, what do we like? We like truth. We like honesty. We like authenticity. Now, listen, there are some people who are horrible people who are authentic in that way, but Bill Walton was not a horrible person. He was a fun person. He liked to have fun. He was serious in his beliefs. You know, obviously, if you go way back when, there were a lot of people who were not really fans of Bill Walton. He had a bit of Muhammad Ali in him. If you go back to the early days of Muhammad Ali, refusing to go into the army, refusing to go fight in Vietnam, although it never got to that point, he just refused to be inducted. He also adopted a Muslim name. He went from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali. So, and he was a loudmouth. So there were things that made, I would say, middle class, average America not really like Muhammad Ali. But as years went by, they fell in love with him. By the time he lit the torch at the Atlanta Olympics, he was a hero that everyone liked. Bill Walton had a bit of the same thing in him. Early on, you know, he was always a bit of a, I would say, didn't go with the trend. For example, that first Final Four I talked to you about, UCLA beat Florida State. After the game, UCLA's the champion. Bill Walton was not very happy. UCLA did not play very well. They did not dominate the game. He didn't play very well. He was like the most unhappy national championship player you could ever think about. He had the counterculture aspect to him. He was arrested when he was playing at UCLA. He took part in a sit-in on Wilshire Boulevard, not far from UCLA, an anti-Vietnam War protest. There are pictures of him. If you go on X or Facebook, you'll see there's one great picture of Bill Walton being led to a LAPD bus that was taking people who were being arrested away to be booked. You can tell who he is. He's stands far above the police officers. He had this aspect to him. He was a bit of a... didn't conform to things, and I think it did bother some people. He went to, obviously, the Portland Trail Blazers, had that counterculture image. He even had a connection, not directly but indirectly, with the Symbionese Liberation Army, Patty Hearst. That was the O.J. Simpson trial of the 1970s. He didn't ever meet Patty Hearst at that time, but one of the gentlemen he was connected with was a guy named Jack Scott. He was very closely associated with Patty Hearst and her efforts to escape the FBI. So this was this counterculture image. So I think many people just didn't like Bill Walton. By the end, by today, everyone loves him. He just was a magnificent guy. I think we saw the side of Bill Walton that I think, touch people's hearts more as an announcer. He just had fun. He talked about things. He took some things seriously, but not a lot of things.
Like what things? What did he take seriously?
Oh, I think he took his beliefs very seriously. Very seriously. I think he had very strong political views. I would say they were mostly left of center, but don't think it was always left of center. He had core beliefs that, you know, he was for right over wrong, good over evil. That is not always left or right. That can be sometimes just very mainstream. But he was a man who, you know, loved to talk about the Grateful Dead. Went to Stanford Law School. I think some people may not realize that during his injuries, when he was not able to play, he enrolled and was accepted to Stanford Law School. It is not easy to be accepted to Stanford Law School. I mean, it is one of the toughest law schools to get into. Bill Walton got in. He was a very smart guy.
Steve Futterman is with us from L.A., remembering his friend Bill Walton, who passed away after a battle with cancer at the age of 71. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I saw, as you were reposting some tributes to him, one thing you wrote about Bill is that many of your conversations with him were not about basketball. What's a memorable conversation that had nothing to do with hoops?
Well, this one sort of has something to do with hoops. I'll find another one to tell you. But and by the way, I would call myself a professional friend. I mean, there are other colleagues of mine who were much closer to Bill than I was. I mean, Jim Gray, I think, was very close to him, much more than I was. I would not put myself in that classification, but we had wonderful times when we would see each other and talk and everything. One of my favorite basketball conversations was when the Lakers had beaten the Celtics in the NBA championship. This was, I believe, Kobe's last championship, so I think we're talking about 2010, something like
somewhere
and
in there.
His son Luke was on the team. So the Lakers in that game seven, I was at then it was still called Staples Center, and I think the Lakers fell behind, I think, in the fourth quarter by around 13 points. And I was telling him, I said, you know, being a Laker fan, not a reporter, but as a Laker fan, I said, I was really nervous. He goes, oh, I knew they were going to win. I go, you did not know they were going to win. Oh, I knew they were going to win. How did you know they were going to win? They were 13 points behind. The Celtics are, I knew they were going to win. And you had that Bill Walton faux bravado. I wouldn't say it was real bravado, but a faux bravado where he would say, oh, I knew that was going to happen, even though he knows deep inside he didn't know. Maybe he wants to say it that way. This is one of the things I think we loved about Bill Walton. He had that faux bravado. He would act like he was always right, but not taking himself seriously. That's another thing I think we liked about Bill Walton. Didn't take himself seriously. We had some discussions when he was having some back problems, and just a different tone came over, and when I talked to him about that, I never knew the seriousness of the pain, but he did talk to me about the pain quite a bit. In that ESPN, I think it was a three-part documentary, brilliant documentary, by the way. If you haven't seen it, you'll really see the whole Bill Walton, and I think you'll probably come away liking him. Maybe not a guarantee, but I think most people will like him. But he talked about, I never realized this, he had thoughts, the pain was so bad, he had thoughts of ending his life at some point. And that sort of shocked me. And when I saw that, I realized that when we were talking about the pain one time about his back, that it was much more serious than he let on, or certainly I ever realized.
And his career in the NBA was cut short by some of the injuries that he dealt
very
with,
short.
Including foot injuries. Those were the ones that bothered him a lot. And certainly that happens to centers, guys that are as big as him and are carrying around as much weight. So actually didn't survive very long in the NBA. I think he's known more for his time at UCLA and playing for John Wooden, of course, as the iconic coach, and as a Hall of Famer, Bill Walton kind of changed the position of center. Let's say we're 10 years down the road and you're talking to people that didn't know Bill at all. How would you describe him to people?
I would say, you see the Joker playing with Denver? Bill Walton was sort of the prototype of what the Joker is today. A great passer. He loved to pass. You know, we all know that LeBron loves to pass, and he does. I mean, look at the assists he has. Bill Walton loved to pass even more than LeBron. He loved the fast break. When he was at UCLA, he had this another player named Greg Lee on the team. And he and Greg Lee were very close friends. They just had a wonderful connection on the fast break. He would get the rebound. He'd throw it out. The outlet pass was amazing for him. He loved the give and go. And he loved to block the ball and keep the ball in play. He didn't like to knock it out of bounds. He liked to keep the ball in play and sometimes almost send it to a UCLA player. You brought up UCLA and John Wooden, by the way. I mentioned his arrest at UCLA. John Wooden was the one who bailed him out.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing.
And John Wooden, just the total, at least visually, the total opposite of Bill Walton. You know, the long hair, sitting on the streets. I mean, Wilshire Boulevard, if you've ever been to L.A., is one of the major streets in L.A., blocking traffic. He's arrested there. And John Wooden, middle class, from Indiana, God-fearing, so conservative in many ways, but not every way, by the way, a bit like Walton, and he bailed him out. And they, by the way, were so devoted to each other. It was that's quite a friendship. That's one of the great friendships around John Wooden and Bill Walton.
Steve Futterman is with us here after hours with Amy Lawrence. Before I let you go, Steve, you posted the words from a text that Bill sent to you last year. Would you mind please telling us about that?
Well, I mean, I came across it today. I didn't realize it. And he sent me a text last year just responding to something. And when I saw it, it almost gave me shivers because it almost, I mean, the way I posted it, it almost sounded like these were like final words from him, not just to me, but to everyone. So I'll read it for you and I'll try not to break up. I'm one of these teary-eyed people in many ways. Mm-hmm. So let me find it and I'll read it to you. Cause it was quite moving. And you know, I can't speak for Bill, but I have a feeling he might not mind these being his, you know, last, farewell to everyone. He said, thanks, Steve. He's responding. He goes, I tried. I look forward to our futures together. Shine on, heal on. Bill Walton, the luckiest guy in the world, from the bright side of the road.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just, again, it was a bit quite touching and a bit shocking when I realized that. And I said, this is what, you know, if I asked Bill, what would your final words be? I don't know if he would have said this, but I can imagine him saying something like that. I liked when he said, I look forward to our futures together.
Was that the last time that you communicated with him?
No. We had a few more communications.
Okay, good.
But that was last year. Almost just a few weeks shy of exactly a year. It was from June of last year.
Hmm. Did he ever speak about his battle with cancer?
No, I was not aware of it at all. I talked to some people who are close to him. I do believe, having heard today Danny Ainge speak, I think his close friends were aware that there were some serious problems going on and that he might be in very, very failing health. I was not aware of it at all. Caught me totally by surprise. I did talk to some people who had lesser connections, not former teammates, who became aware of it. Apparently, he stopped all broadcasting in March, and that may have given some of those in the broadcasting field, you know, who do play-by-play stuff, a hint that he had some serious health problems. I was not aware of it at all.
Hmm. Sounded like he wanted to keep it private for his family and his closest friends and not make a big deal out of it. But he was a big deal. Everywhere he went, it turned into a big deal. Steve, it's so wonderful to get your reflections and your personal connection and conversations with Bill. Thank you so much for sharing them with us and giving us some insight into who he was off the basketball court and away from prying eyes.
Yeah, no, he was amazing. He was eccentric. But he could be, again, he was these contradictions. He could be this way. He could be that way. He could be conservative. We knew he could be liberal. He could also be conservative. He was wild and goofy. He could be very serious. He was loving, loved his kids so much. Another thing I think many people who know Bill Walton know about this, but if you're not that much into him, Luke Walton,
Yes.
Was named after Maurice Lucas, who was probably maybe his all-time best friend as a teammate with the Portland Trail Blazers. He named his first son after Maurice Lucas.
Steve, it's so good to talk to you. Thank you so much for offering. I hope that we cross paths again soon.
Yes, Amy, anytime.
Our friend Steve Futterman joining us from L.A. with his personal reflections and even sharing the last one of the last texts that he got from Bill. You get an idea of who Bill was away from the basketball court. And as limited as my interactions with the Hall of Famer, and he was inducted back in the early 90s, I know that you never walked away from a conversation or even a broadcast with Bill Walton without some type of impression. He was memorable. He was unique. As Steve says, he was multifaceted. Loved basketball, loved teamwork, loved to talk, loved to help his friends, help his family, loved the Grateful Dead, loved music, loved books, had no idea that he got into Stanford Law School. That's pretty impressive. And on this day, man, the number of people coming out of the woodwork to share about their relationships or their impressions or maybe even the impact of one time coming across and coming into contact with Bill Walton. As I say, memorable. On Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. It's good to connect with you. Hope that you enjoyed your holiday weekend. If you had some time off, whether a long weekend or even longer, if you took some extra days off around it. We got to talk about those Celtics, his former Celtics, sweeping the Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals. We'll get reaction from both locker rooms straight ahead.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Turner playing with five fouls. Tatum switches to the left hand, steps back to his left and drills a three. It's a three-point game. Fast back for Holiday. Holiday dribbling low, attacking Toppin, gets in pretty deep. Pump fake, puts it off the window and in. Scoring in the foul. It's late fourth quarter time, so here comes Drew Holiday. Jaylen, pump fake, steps through, floats it up and in. And game four is tied with 2:39 to go.
That's that move that he's done over and over again. It's the man up in the air.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Yet another rally in the late stages. This one over the final 6 minutes. The Pacers had their chances, oh so many chances, and they will spend time thinking about those missed opportunities. They were up 8 with 6 minutes to go, and Boston scored on a 15, or closed the game, I should say, on a 15-4 scoring run that resulted in a sweep. But yeah, completely different type of final 2.5 minutes in that there was just one bucket. And that was Derek White's huge three that put the Celtics in front 105-102. Ultimately, that was the final score. Now, I'm not sure if you know or you watching the game, Derek White was terrible at the beginning. Could not hit the broadside of a barn. But that shot is one that offers redemption. That shot is one that keeps you coming back. He finished with 16 points, 5 steals, 3 block shots, only 2 triples amongst his points, but that one critical.
We just kind of wanted to stay the course. You know, they're going to make runs. They're going to do what they do, and so we just try to stay the course. And I'm just spacing, and shout out to JB for driving and making a good play. I just finally made a shot.
Yeah, Jaylen Brown only had 2 assists all game, and yet one of them the biggest of the series. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Shout out to JB because he also won the Larry Bird Eastern Conference Finals MVP. And he was tenacious on both ends of the court, not just in this game 4, but throughout the series. And this one, he had a power surge late. So a bunch of big plays for him in the second half. But 29 points, 6 rebounds, 3 steals, 1 block, and 2 assists. And he actually was not expecting that this would be his honor.
I wasn't expecting that at all. You know, I'll never win. So I was just happy that we won. And give credit to Indiana. You know, they played us tough. I know, like, people think that Indiana wasn't a good team or whatever the case may be. I mean, I thought they were as tough as anybody we've played all season.
From the first day I've been here, he's become more just like open-minded towards just growing as a basketball player. See what he's done in the community, and I just really, really value the time that I get to spend with him on and off the court. And you know, he just keeps getting better and better. I'm happy for him.
No, that was special. Big time to be rewarded for you know, how you play, and you know, that's a special accomplishment for him and for everybody.
Jaylen Brown did not make the All-NBA team. And you hear him say, I never win, bleep. Well, that trophy is his, and he earned it. He set the tone for the Celtics in this series. And he says, going back to last year, when the Celtics fell behind the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals by 3 games, and while they did force a Game 7, it was awful. He had some memorable nights that people pointed to say, that's why the Celtics can't win. He's why the Celtics didn't make it back to the finals or didn't achieve their ultimate goals. And he's had to hear that. He's had to grow. He's had to learn. Wait until you hear him say what he feels is the biggest change in his career. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We'll get reaction from both locker rooms straight ahead.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Turner playing with 5 fouls. Tatum switches to the left hand, steps back to his left and drills a three. It's a 3-point game. Fast back for Holiday. Holiday dribbling low, attacking Toppin, gets in pretty deep. Pump fake, puts it off the window and in. Scored in the foul. It's late fourth quarter time, so here comes Drew Holiday. Jaylen, pump fake, steps through, floats it up and in. And game four is tied with 2:39 to go.
That's that move that he's done over and over again. It's the man up in the air.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Yet another rally in the late stages. This one over the final 6 minutes. The Pacers had their chances, oh, so many chances, and they will spend time thinking about those missed opportunities. They were up 8 with 6 minutes to go, and Boston scored on a 15, or closed the game, I should say, on a 15-4 scoring run that resulted in a sweep. But yeah, completely different type of final 2.5 minutes in that there was just one bucket, and that was Derek White's huge three that put the Celtics in front 105-102. Ultimately, that was the final score. Now, I'm not sure if you know or you watching the game, Derek White was terrible at the beginning, could not hit the broadside of a barn, but that shot is one that offers redemption. That shot is one that keeps you coming back. He finished with 16 points, 5 steals, 3 block shots, only 2 triples amongst his points, but that one critical.
We just kind of wanted to stay the course. You know, they're going to make runs. They're going to do what they do, and so we just try to stay the course. And I'm just spacing, and shout out to JB for driving and making a good play. I just finally made a shot.
Yeah, Jaylen Brown only had 2 assists all game, and yet one of them the biggest of the series. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Shout out to JB because he also won the Larry Bird Eastern Conference Finals MVP. And he was tenacious on both ends of the court, not just in this game four, but throughout the series. And this one, he had a power surge late. So a bunch of big plays for him in the second half. But 29 points, 6 rebounds, 3 steals, 1 block, and 2 assists. And he actually was not expecting that this would be his honor.
I wasn't expecting that at all. You know, I'll never win. So I was just happy that we won. And give credit to Indiana. You know, they played us tough. I know, like, people think that Indiana wasn't a good team or whatever the case may be. I mean, I thought they were as tough as anybody we've played all season.
From the first day I've been here, he's become more just like open-minded towards just growing as a basketball player. See what he's done in the community, and I just really, really value the time that I get to spend with him on and off the court. And you know, he just keeps getting better and better. I'm happy for him.
No, that was special. Big time to be rewarded for, you know, how you play. And, you know, that's a special accomplishment for him and for everybody.
Jaylen Brown did not make the All-NBA team. And you hear him say, I never win, bleep. Well, that trophy is his, and he earned it. He set the tone for the Celtics in this series. And he says, going back to last year, when the Celtics fell behind the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals by 3 games, and while they did force a Game 7, it was awful. He had some memorable nights that people pointed to say, that's why the Celtics can't win. He's why the Celtics didn't make it back to the finals or didn't achieve their ultimate goals. And he's had to hear that. He's had to grow. He's had to learn. Wait until you hear him say what he feels is the biggest change in his career. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.